Good morning and welcome to another version of the Weekly Amunah Teleform. It is Henry Harris and it is good to be back after a week away. It is October 24th, 10 a.m. And this week's, we're going to be speaking more about the topic of will, of personal ratzon, and how that interacts with our divine the divine flow of psychological experience. So let's just review again the nature of this call. This call is a call about emunah, the simple truth behind our experience, the fact that we are having an experience of the single, simple source behind all creation, otherwise known as the Creator, who moment to moment to moment is maintaining and sustaining our experience of life, not just the circumstances of our life, but the psychological experience that we're having. That is to say that we're not having a direct experience of the events and the circumstances of our present, our past. Rather, we're having an experience in this moment of those circumstances. There are real circumstances in our life. There are real circumstances in our past. But our psychological experience of those things are not defined by, they're not determined by, they're not shaped directly by the circumstances themselves, because that would be a misunderstanding. That would suggest that there is power in things of this world to cause something, i.e. our psychological experience, right? That there would be direct correlation between a feeling I'm having and an event from my past or a circumstance of the present. Again, there are circumstances, and it could be that there are circumstances that are, there could be events and actions that are wrong or that are damaging and that one should seek to change. But the psychological experience that we're having, It can be quite easy to associate that feeling directly with the events and circumstances, and that would be a misunderstanding. And of course, it would draw us into a world of illusion. It really would draw us into a world of illusion that would leave us ultimately kind of shadow boxing. You know, I've shared in the past the metaphor, and I've shown the video of a child encountering her shadow and literally screaming. You know, literally screaming in terror and running away from the shadow. And I think that the metaphor is so powerful that we have a real set of feelings and perceptions. We are having a whole bunch of real psychological feelings and perceptions that are quite noticeable to us, in the same way that this blackened shape was quite noticeable to this little girl. But obviously, to the degree that this girl freaks out and screams in terror and tries to run away from the shadow, it has less to do with the nature of the shadow causing her that fearful feeling more than it does her misunderstanding. That's what's going on with us. We're having feelings. We're having psychological experiences. We associate them with the events and circumstances of our life, and then as a result, we engage in this kind of struggle or fear or desire to kind of control or run from our circumstances. And of course, all of that is really just a misunderstanding. So that's what we're exploring. And that is, this conversation is a mitzvah conversation. It's an exploration of the truth behind emunah. And simultaneously, it's an exploration of the truth behind the second of the first two commandments, to not believe in gods other than God, to not ascribe power to anything other than God, to know that the feeling I'm having in my heart of annoyance with the child's not listening or the child's acting out, etc., it's not coming directly from the child's misbehavior. It's normal. It's human. It's not, it's uncomfortable, to say the least, but I at least know what's true about it. Now, that's my introduction, and I've just been so engaged in learning about the idea of will, the idea of personal will, which I guess in a certain sense to me has looked a little bit fishy in the topic, in at least in my experience of learning about the principles of innate health, which at this point I don't really directly seek to, you know, I don't see myself at this point as directly a student of the principles. I was inspired by them. They informed a very deep and meaningful set of insights for me. I continue to be inspired by the simplicity of that understanding. But I, as you could probably tell from these talks, I generally am at this point really looking to illuminate what I see the Torah's explanations of our inner experience. And one of the things that has looked at times to me kind of like, okay, where is there room in this understanding for personal will? Like it has felt at times a lot about kind of like being a watcher, just watching your feelings, you know, looking for a feeling, looking for, you know, the simple truth behind feelings. And there could be, again, I'm speaking for myself, my misunderstanding, because I don't want to suggest that I'm an expert in the principles such that this is missing. It seems to me that it's possible to overlook the role of will in knowing the truth of our internal psychological experience, right? Like the ability to see the deep, beautiful, simple truth behind our psychological experience, and the whole endeavor to kind of understand that is not at odds with the power and the gift, of will, right? So how does that work? So here's what I'm seeing, that I'm going to give a little introduction, okay? So this whole world is really an answer to one profound question, and that question is, how can the Almighty bestow the greatest pleasure upon His beloved creations, His children, without causing them eternal shame, right? The greatest pleasure that there could ever be is an experience of closeness and connection to the source of all being, to the infinite. But to the degree that our souls would cleave to that infinite being and experience that extraordinary pleasure without having done anything to earn it, the pleasure would be overshadowed by an sense of extraordinary shame. The sages refer to this as Nahama de Kisufa, the bread of shame. Imagine if you were to discover that, let's say you had a job, and you were to discover that every paycheck you'd ever gotten in your job had nothing to do with your performance. And really you weren't ever truly relied on or employed in an actual sense. Rather, there was a wealthy benefactor who basically wanted to provide you a paycheck. And he did it in a manner that looked like you had a job, and it looked like you had real responsibilities, but it was all literally just an act. You know, it was all just a play, and you were living in this play thinking that you were doing something of substance, but no one needed your efforts in any manner whatsoever, and you just got a paycheck so that you wouldn't feel bad. But then it became known to you that the whole thing was a farce. The whole thing was a farce, and you then continued to receive checks. Week in, week out, you'd get your paycheck, you'd pay your bills, you'd pay your rent or your mortgage or your tuition or your whatever it is. You continued getting the check every week, knowing that this check was really not a paycheck, right? The ideal is that a healthy person would feel awful about that. You know, I can imagine, you know, like it's of course, we live in a world where today many people will not feel awful about that, but that's not indicative of what a tuned-in soul would experience, right? A tuned-in soul would experience busha from that. So this whole world is simply one answer to that question. How can I bestow upon my children the most extraordinary pleasure that could ever be in a way that won't offer them the intense pain of shame? So God created a something called Olam. Olam literally means hidden, that we could, and then He implanted within us this desire, this neshama, that is basically a wanting thing. It wants, it seeks, it needs, it's wanting, seeking, needing something which obviously is God, but we're placed in a world where it looks like God is not here. It's not visible to us in a direct sense. It's hidden, but we're seeking it anyway. So we could get confused along the way. We think money is going to give us things. We want security. We want joy. We want inspiration. We want all of the things that are really trappings of a connection to the infinite. But we get confused, you know, along the way. We don't see God. And so it looks to us like, well, my child's getting a good grade on the report card is the key to my experience of peace and well-being. My having X amount of money in the bank is the key to my having peace and well-being. My having X type of interactions with my spouse is the key to my whatever it is. So the whole of this world is the opportunity to seek and find the infinite in a world in which the infinite looks to be hidden. That's it. That's the whole thing. And the power of wanting is really the most profound and meaningful resource we have. Now keep in mind, as I think I shared the last time we met, the real desire, the real notion of ratzon is wanting the infinite. And to my mind, that's a faculty, a power that is somewhat lost on most of us. Like we're highly caught up in, there's a lot of things that we want, it's just that they're not a clear representative of the infinite. You know, like if a person's running late to a meeting and he wants to get there on time, his wanting in that moment has more to do with the desire for relief. He has an unpleasant feeling that he's running late. He wants relief from that feeling, so he's rushing. It's not called ratzon, will, in the spiritual sense. The real notion of will, of spiritual will, is wanting the infinite. And so what I would say is that it's an extraordinary power. It's an extraordinary power to exercise, and it is a life-changing experience to exercise the power of will. Now, what's challenging is that it's not noticeable to us that we have something called the power of our will. It's kind of lost on us that there is this power, but yet it is not only life-changing in the truth of the word, it's life-changing in its capacity to affect our actual trajectory, our experience of life. So when we might find ourselves, let's say, in an asayon, we might find ourselves in a test where we literally have no access to, we feel tremendously burdened by some conflict or by some inability to overcome some situation. It just feels like we have this extraordinarily painful feeling, and we don't know how to rid ourselves of it. It looks so clearly like it's circumstance-based, and we cannot get ourselves past the circumstance, whether it's a habit, whether it's a situation, whether it's a lack of some kind of material thing. In that moment, what I'm discovering is that I first just remind myself the whole of this world, and this to me is an activation of ratzon. This act of reviewing this for me, it has less to do with seeking a feeling, and it has more to do with kind of touching the faculty of ratzon, of touching the power within me to want, independent of any need for a gratifying feeling. I'm touching the power of my wanting. That is itself an act of tremendous creation, tremendous act of creation to touch that and actualize or experience the faculty of wanting. And again, like I said, it's somewhat lost on much of us because we're so caught up in getting certain feelings and running away from certain feelings, which are not really a true expression of the desire for the infinite. So I'm giving you a suggestion of what I've seen recently in my experience, that I'm simply looking to want the truth. I want the truth that this world is an answer to the question, how do I give my children the pleasure of eternal connection without extraordinary shame? Oh, I make a world, I make a place in which I am hidden, and I give them the need for connection that will not be satisfied from the physical world. I will implant within them the soul, the desire to connect to the infinite, and yet I will conceal from them my presence in a way that they will have to seek my presence. That's the pain I'm feeling. The pain I'm feeling is the pain of not knowing where the divine is, of not sensing the truth of the divine. That pain is literally the catalyst for this world's mission. You know, it's literally like pain and hidden are synonymous. The pain of the soul not experiencing the connection is what that's the space in which I get to accomplish the job of which this whole world was made. I want my children to have the experience of earning a connection to me, that thereby they will not experience extraordinary shame. So I stand in my pain, and I acknowledge, God, I want the truth. I want the truth of this moment. This moment is literally the whole purpose for which you created this world. And it is so normal, so human. It's so fundamentally normal to be in this feeling of pain. It's exactly where I need to be. The whole existence of Olam, of world, is to provide my soul with a sense of its missing the presence of the Creator, and then it should look for the Creator and thereby avoid the bread of shame. That's the whole thing. And I want that, God. I want that reality. I want it. That alone is an expression of will that has the power to shape me. It, as I shared the last time we spoke about the passage in the Talmud that says that a person who's a known Rasha, a person who's a known wicked man, goes to a Jewish lady and he hands her a ring and he says, "Behold, you're married to me with this ring on the condition that I am a tzaddik." And he did nothing of any kind to demonstrate that he's a tzaddik, but he said those words to her and she accepted the ring. The Talmud says that she is potentially married. If she wants to go and get married to another man, she has to first get a get document from him. Why? Because it could be in those moments he had a sincere desire, he had a sincere want to be a tzaddik. That was a self, it was an act of self-definition to exercise that want. It, of course, doesn't mean that it will change him forever. It could, but it might not. But in any case, in that moment, he was successful, extraordinarily successful. When we find ourselves with habitual feelings, repeated thoughts of a negative quality, or repeated, like a loop of painful feelings, what we can know is that it's enough just to stand in that painful feeling and want to be in God's world, to exercise our will. God, I am your partner. You created this world that I should experience the pain of not finding you, that I should look for you, that I should thereby earn a sense of earn the connection to you and not experience the pain of shame. I embrace that world, God. I am your partner. I want this world. That alone puts us in a whole new light. So we can acknowledge the truth about our experience and our feelings of intense pain. And we don't need to wait for a nice feeling. We can want the truth about where those, what's true about those feelings. What's true about those feelings is that they are divine energy, but they're so purposeful. The opportunity to want that feeling as part of the truth of this world has been so rich to me. I don't know, I'm still learning about it, but the notion that we can set aside time, David HaMelech was praying and expressing this will throughout his day. You're walking to an errand and you're saying to yourself as you're walking on the way, God, I want your world. I want the hiddenness of this world that I can thereby feel the lack of you, and then desire you, seek you, want you, knowing that you are the only thing that's really missing is awareness of you, and that I have the responsibility and opportunity to seek you and discover that through my effort. That will is the beginning of my effort. It's the essence of what I have to offer in this world. I don't have the power to create results. I do have the power to want. We're here to discover the falsehood, the illusion of Kochi ve'otzim yadi. We're here to discover the illusion of my might, and the strength of my hand is what creates results in this world. We're here to discover that our true faculty, our true power, is the power to want the Almighty and to want the world that He created, whereby we may discover and earn a real connection with Him. Okay, I'm going to pause here and see if we have a comment, thought, or question about what we're talking about. Anybody? Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi. I have a comment as always.
Oh, good.
I always seem to comment.
Good.
So as you were talking, I think I had a small insight, and I'm curious to hear what you think about it. So whenever something's happening, my first thought is, Hashem did this. In other words, they always say, no, it's from Hashem. Don't think the person did it, right? The person's the stick. Hashem is holding the stick. But the more you were talking, I feel like I want to say now, Hashem, where are you in this? Because I don't know, for me, it's not enough to know Hashem did it. It's not doing it for me. At certain points, I would be able to say, Hashem did it, it's good. I don't know that that helps as much anymore. But I feel like I saw now to not say Hashem did it. That I know already. But I want, maybe the next step is to say, Hashem, where are you in this? Because I don't know, doing is an act. Where are you? What? Not what do you want from me? Because it sounded to me the way you were saying, it's more like get to where are you, not who are you.
I want you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
right.
I do. As long as we're clear, and this is, you know, certainly a consistent message that we're after, and that is, you know, we want to just notice whether we have a will to have a different feeling. Right, like the guy who's running late to a meeting. He has a lot of urgency. It looks like he's a very willful guy in that moment, but that's not what we understand to be the life-defining quality of will, of ratzon. That's not called will. That's called the desire for relief from an unpleasant feeling. Mm-hmm. Will, in the way we're referring to, is the will to find the Almighty. And that includes the acceptance of His world the way He made it, right? So in that painful moment to say, God, where are you, if the underlying kind of desire behind it is, God, I accept and acknowledge that there is nothing missing in this moment except my awareness of you, and I'm here to want you. I want you. I want to know you. You know, that is an expression of ratzon that is what I see, you know, that, and there's a value to that. There's a tremendous, that's a life-changing experience. It's defining.
I feel like this is what always trips me up. There's a Torah commandment, be happy, so then I try to say, okay, I think, which could be the wrong thought, that if I'll see Hashem in it, the experience of, it's not the pain, it's more the sadness of what happened. That could shift to being still in pain, because sometimes you cut your finger, but you don't have to be mad about it. You know what I'm saying, Mike? But it doesn't mean your finger's not hurting. But the experience of the, so I do feel like if I could find Hashem a little bit more than I see Him, the experience of the pain would change. Now, is that getting in the way? According to what you're saying?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I do have,
okay.
I'm wary of,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm wary of any attachment to a change in experience.
Okay. That's what confuses me, I think, a lot, because I do feel a little bit, you know, like that Torah commandment of be happy and you'll read all the books, be bisimcha. So I already know I can't always be there, but sometimes I could sometimes I just sometimes think, like, if I could see Hashem better than I do, because I do see him on some level, but I would definitely be able to be more, I feel like more besimcha with what's going on, with certain circumstances. And now, if that, I don't know that that's the goal, right? But I guess I don't know the goal, because it's a little confusing when you're learning Torah. There's a little bit of a confusion to me with be besimcha, but at the same time, there is suffering. You know what I'm saying? So to be besimcha in this, I don't even know what that would look like. You know what I'm saying? Like, what does it look like to be
besimcha
in suffering? You know what I mean? So I don't know if I know.
So say it again. What's the question? Is what does what look like? I didn't understand what you're asking.
In other words, what does it look like to be besimcha? In other words, to take an extreme example, right? Someone's in the concentration camp, right? The rabbis in the camp, they're making matzah. And they're doing the mitzvah, right? They're risking their lives to get their kezayit of matzah. You know, there's many stories like this. But they wanted to do the mitzvah, obviously. They risked their lives to it. But were they besimcha that they're in the concentration camp? Like, I don't see how that mixes. I think that's always my problem.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that I just don't know how to mix that. They did the mitzvah. They wanted to do the mitzvah. They risked their lives. But were they besimcha? They were besimcha when they ate the matzah. I think they were grateful that they got to do that. But the experience after they ate the matzah and they were grateful, they're back in the concentration camp. So are you besimcha every day you wake up? You know what I'm saying, Link?
Yeah, I do. My understanding is that simcha is the value of, you know, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, v'samachta b'kol atov. I forget the exact language. That the references in our Torah to the value and the pursuit of simcha is an instruction. There's a certain wisdom associated with finding simcha, right? We have a wisdom associated with that. Look at the good. Focus
right
on the good. Now, focus on the good is an effort. Focus on the good is an expression of wanting something, but it's not talking about getting a feeling. It's talking about doing a certain wise practice. Yeah. So I value the wise practice of seeking the good, but you know it's so easy.
But the feeling is simcha. Simcha is a feeling.
It is a feeling, but I'm not commanded in the realm of feelings. I'm commanded in the realm of wanting. I'm commanded in the realm of putting my attention in a certain manner, right?
Okay.
That's my command. My domain and my lane. I have a certain lane. My lane is wanting things. So when the Torah says, "Well, want happiness," fine. So what's the definition of happiness? Focusing on the good. Okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to want
that.
So
maybe my definition of happiness is wrong, because I never saw it as focusing on the good as the definition of happiness. I saw it as a feeling.
There is a result that you can be blessed with because
a feeling.
You know, look, the we have a mitzvah to make parnasah, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a, you know, we're in the lane of trying. We're in the lane of making
right
an effort. So what's that effort? Oh, well, it's, you know, we could talk about what the effort is of making parnassah, but it's not the results that you're commanded in. It's the effort that you're commanded in. And that's really what trips people up. What trips people up is they get caught up in the results, and they get caught up in linking the value of their effort to the results they're getting, and then they get discouraged because they're seeing a disconnect. Hey, I'm trying, but it's not yielding a result. Maybe my efforts are not worth so much. Well,
right,
that's certainly, you know, good news for the Yetzer Hara, because he's trying to discourage us, you know, to the degree that we actually believe that we're in the result business and we link effort to result, then we start to kind of judge and criticize our effort, and then start to get discouraged, and then start to make less effort, and then lo and behold, we're like seated on our hands feeling immobilized, you know. So in simcha as well, we're not in the results lane, we're in the effort lane. The effort is focus on what you have. And all I'm saying is that I'm just sitting with this one kind of truth that, like, it's just so powerful to me that this whole experience of this world is to be exposed to the pain of not seeing Hashem, and it's all bekavanah, like it's all with explicit intent, the normalness of that. The whole design of the world would be that there would be a soul that craves the presence of the Creator, and yet the Creator has hidden himself, that feeling of something missing, that urge, that pain, should then be a basis for us to seek him. And there's, of course, the opportunity to go right or left. You know, to go left is, you know, all kinds of things of this world. That's where our cravings will be gratified. Alternatively, we could go right. You know, oh no, it's ultimately the Creator is the basis of all of what we're wanting, and choosing to do his will is all that there really is for us to do. And everything else is in his hands, you know, and that freedom is crazy. Like the freedom that can come from that, and we work at that. That we work at. We work at the wanting. When we say that Moshe Rabbeinu prayed 515 times to go into Israel, I mean, think about it. If you stood in front of a vending machine and you put in a dollar to get a bottle of water, and you pressed it once, you know, you might press it two times. You might press it five times, right? At a certain point, you're going to stop pressing the button. You know what I'm saying? Unless you're a little bit, you know, manic or whatever, right? He obviously understood that the power of tefillah is irrelevant to the result. Like he was completely, they weren't connected. Like he saw that there was value in wanting the truth of Israel. There's a truth called living in the land of Israel. He wanted it. Not once, not 10, not 100, not 300, you know, on and on and on. The power of wanting was an act of profound self-definition. And that's what we get to do. And guess what? We're good at that. We are so good at that. And guess what else? It's the only thing we're actually good at. The only thing we're actually good at is wanting the Creator, wanting the infinite, wanting the will of our Creator. Now, lo and behold, if we do that sincerely, we'll see pathways. We'll see pathways to choose and to take action, and you know, doors will become more and more visible to us. But it's based on not becoming discouraged by the misunderstanding of, hey, my efforts must not be worth much because the results aren't, you know, indicating that.
Okay.
Good?
Yep. Yeah. I think it was clear to. I think when you just redefined Simcha for me, it just, and then you said all that you said, I really see it a little differently now. So I feel
Good.
Yeah, I want to see where that.
Do you know how pleasant and how precious it is to your Creator that you express a desire to live in His world, in a world of Olam, where you acknowledge that your truest desire is to see him, and that the fact that he's concealed is precious. It's literally the answer to his question, how am I going to give my children the greatest blessing I could give them? Oh, I'll hide myself. That's the answer to that question. Like when you embrace that and express that you want that world, it is incredible nachas ruach to your Creator. It's incredible success. And that's what all of our ancestors did. You know, the mothers of Israel were barren for many years. They had extraordinary character. They had extraordinary merits, right? They had awesome, awesome spiritual merits. They were barren. So in what how did they develop, how did they get kids? Through prayer. Through their conveying, I want to be a mother. I want to bring forth the next generation of your, I want to bring the next link in the chain. I want it. I want it. I want it. I want it. They didn't stop. And they didn't get discouraged. Now, I'm not saying they never got discouraged. They were human beings too. I don't know to speak of them in that way that I speak about myself. I just trust that I can draw lessons from them because that's what I'm supposed to do. even if we're not, you know, literally working on the same plane. Despite their incredible righteousness, they were meant to express desire. They were meant to express ratzon. And that's what we get to do. And that is itself success. And the to me, the great phenomenon of addiction and
are you there? Because I don't hear you. Hello? Hello?